What's up, everyone? By now, you know we have partnered with the great people from Cut, the social betting platform. Cut is a peer-to-peer betting platform that allows you to bet directly against all your buds and all the other Canes fans out there. That's right. You can join us on the Real Ones Canes podcast, a.k.a. Believe Miami, on Cut today and bet directly against me, against Brandon, against anybody on your favorite sports, entertainment, pop culture, politics, whatever you want. Cut makes it so easy. Cut is the ultimate put your money where your mouth is platform, and it's legal right here in Florida and probably where you are too. Be sure to follow at Cut Bet on all your social media channels and download the app via the App Store or at cut.com. Use code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, Miami. That's BELIEVE Miami for a 10% deposit bonus. It's Cut, and it's freaking awesome. Everyone, and welcome to the Real One Canes podcast. I'm the Beast Brian London. He is Brandon O'Doy. Follow us on X. You can follow Brandon at Brandon_O'Doy. Follow myself at Miami Radio Beast. And go subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this right now. Just hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button. Maybe make a few positive comments. That will help spread the word, get this thing out there. And go hit up the YouTube channel as well at the Real Ones Canes podcast. And on the YouTube channel, you'll find some interviews we got after the spring game. Brandon got a chance to talk to Mario Cristobal and Cam Ward, Marquise Lightfoot, and some other guys. They're all up on the YouTube channel. But Brandon, you were not able to be at the spring game. You were traveling around the United States as you take some kids and go show them the ropes at different colleges. And that's always a great thing to hear about. But we had the spring game. It was on campus, Cobb Stadium. It was packed. You know, about 5,000 people were there. They did a nice job of kind of making that place look a little bit nicer, adding some grandstands. They did a great job with concessions. They had a bunch of food trucks and really cool stuff out there. So the University of Miami made the best of that situation of not being at a larger stadium. So I like that. That was good. And, you know, we got to see some live tackling football, kind of, for a couple of hours on the UM campus. It was, let's be honest, they weren't running the same plays that they're going to be running in the swamp on August 31st. They weren't running what they're going to be running in the fourth quarter against Florida State, you know, come the season. But it was 11 on 11, so we got to see that. And, you know, most importantly, I got to see Cam Ward in person, and he looked the part. He looked the part. He did well. And, you know, I don't know what I was expecting, but it looked good. It all looked good. And, I know you didn't have a chance to be there, but now that we're done with spring football, what did you take out of the last month plus of this team going through it down at Greentree and then finally in the spring game? Where do you think this team is heading into the summer here?
Well, I think, you know, one important thing about the spring game is you don't see Canes fans coming out with a ton of question marks. There are not a lot of things that you're hearing, you know, and you were there, and I'd be interested to get your opinion on this, but you don't see gaping holes for a football team that's expected to be good this year. And there's a lot of positive comments about a kid that may have a national brand this year in Cam Ward. And so I think that's the biggest takeaway from the spring. Like, there's advancement. The people who are being talked about nationally might be able to stand up to the weight. In the past, we've had guys who were talked about nationally, and they couldn't hold the water. You know what I mean? And so it looks as if Cam Ward is a guy who can do that. And so I think what you're going to see, though, is that you have some good young talent at receiver, but a little nervous Nelly about the veteran nature of, you know, the wide receiver corps. You let a guy like Kobe Young go, and, you know, I'm of the opinion that he should have just been paid to stay. You don't find a guy like that. He would have been third year in his program, sixth floor plus, very fast. George is talking about him as, you know, wide receiver one, you know, and this is the best team in college football. And he was in your locker room. And it's like, you got to pay whatever the cost is. I think so. And so now you're back in the wide receiver market in the portal, and you're going to bring in a guy and have to pay him what you would have had to pay Kobe or more. And it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But you do have to get some veteran ability in the receiver core. But I think Horton looks good. We know what Zay brings. Jacoby's solid, and you like the freshman. So you're going to get a few more freshmen in here. You're going to have depth, but as someone said to me, Brandon, who do you throw the ball to when it's third in the game and you can't get X open because he's probably going to be doubled, or you can't see him because he's only 5'9", 5'10"?
Yeah, you and I talked about this. Colby Young gave you that guy that on a third and whatever, you know, 7 seconds left, you need to find someone in the end zone that's a big target. He gave you that guy. Now you got to go find out a 6'5 guy that's proven, right? You know, at this point with this team, and we'll get into this in a second, you're not looking for the project. You're looking for someone that's done it before. And those guys aren't just growing on trees everywhere.
No, they don't. They don't.
Not at the level that you need. So that is an issue. I will say this. If there was an MVP of the spring game, it was probably Isaiah Horton. He just really showed out. He was really good, and Cam looked really comfortable throwing him the football. X looked good. Also, offensively, I can't say enough about Elijah Lofton. He lined up mostly at running back during the spring game, and Mario even said, well, you know, the last 2 weeks of practice have been closed to you guys. You have no idea what we're doing with Elijah Lofton, so just wait and see. And I think there's a lot of that going around with the offense and the defense that we didn't, you know, the last 2 weeks of practice for spring practice had no media viewing for a variety of reasons, some of which we can talk about here and some of which we can't. But they are doing some things. They are doing some unique things with some of these guys that we didn't get a chance to see in practice or in the spring game. But as it relates to the receiver position, they definitely need that one guy. They're going to need a running back, right? We saw Henry Parrish leave and Trevante Citizen leave. So they're going to need a running back. They're going to need a couple of stud, one or two offensive linemen probably, because some have gone out. So you need to bring some in. And you know, it's an interesting mix on defense, Brandon. I really liked, it just so happened that where I was standing, Marquise Lightfoot was always lined up on my side of the field. And I was really impressed by that freshman, really impressed by him. He's definitely going to make an impact this year. You know, obviously with Kiko out, some of the other linebackers, like Popo had to stand, you know, step up and what have you. And we saw Reuben Bain get a couple of series, not as much as I would have liked to. You know, he's coming back from some stuff. So, you know, we had to kind of see that. But, you know, I don't want to overdo it and say, hey, this team is pretty close. But I would say they're closer than they have been.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say without overdoing it.
Right, like they've made steps forward, so that's good to see. But there's still some positions out there that,
you know,
they need to work on, and we'll talk about the Porter in the next the portal in the next segment. But
can I just interject and say this? It's so telling to me how bad this program is underperformed when no one is comfortable saying, yeah, this team should be good this year. Like, no one is. No one with 5+ years on this beat is willing to say anything like college football playoff, Heisman Trophy, Doak Walker. Like, nobody wants to talk about anything bigger than August 31st. Nobody is willing.
There is absolutely no bravado. There's just not. No one's swaggering around, and I hate that word because it gets overused. No one is, you know. I mean, yeah, sure. Fans are on X.
I've heard swagger a while down here.
Yeah,
I mean, you said it last week, and I was like, "Wow, that's a word I haven't heard in a while."
But, I mean, listen, the fans are going to be on X arguing with Gator fans and Seminole fans, and that's going on 24-7, 365 for the last...
That's whether we're good or bad. I mean,
that happens. But there's no one out there that's trying to make the case for, like, all those postseason awards or Heismans and all that stuff. Yeah, that's not a thing that's out there. So just to wrap up the spring game and the spring season... It was good to be down there on campus. I talked to a bunch of former players. I know a bunch of those guys, just getting their thoughts on things. And everyone seems to be, you know, thinking positively about what, because a lot of the former players had a chance to go to practice that we weren't able to be at. And so I definitely heard some really good things about a lot of different position groups from different former players I was able to talk to. And I think it was really good for a lot of the new guys, that just the early enrollees, to kind of get out there and do it in front of some fans and kind of feel like, all right, now it feels like college football, right? We're in front of the fans, all that stuff, the band's there, you know, all that stuff's going down. So yeah, it was fine. It was good. But you know, again, they didn't roll out what they're going to roll out on August 31st. And then is when we're going to have to start to really see what is happening. I will say this though. We've been through our differences on the last quarterback, right? That's fine. I will say this. There's a different vibe with Cam Ward under center and also as the leader, without a doubt, of this offense. Yeah. He is leading. And there's something to be said for that.
That's what quarterbacks are supposed to do. I mean, they're the face of the franchise. And, you know, I went down there once this spring. You went down there once this spring. And we both came back with the same stuff. And we don't have to go down there. We know so many people who are plugged in, so we can pick up the phone. But to cap all of this off, Beast, I think the biggest thing is the best part of spring, nobody got hurt. Not one critical and key player that's expected to start or even be in the two deep got injured, and the guys who were already injured are well on their way to recovery.
Yeah, and, for sure.
You know, we had some departures. I know we'll talk about that. But I think the biggest thing is it's a step forward. And when you're at a program, and see, I don't know if you recall this, but I said, you know, like very on in us starting the Real Ones Pains podcast, I said, man, Miami's beyond a rebuild as a program. Like, it's a reestablishment. Like, yeah, there's history, but like, it's been so irrelevant for 20 plus years. That's not a rebuild. A rebuild is you fell off 5-6 years, whatever, and you're trying to get back to where you were. Miami hasn't been in the conversation of winning in 20 years. We had one season in 2018 where this team was a national threat and was ranked in the top 10. It's never happened since. You know what I mean? And Mark Richt had a really good 9-whatever year, a good little bowl win. But we're jumping up and down for beating West Virginia in like the Citrus Bowl or whatever that was. I mean, this is a team that competed for New Year's Six. This is a team that competed for championships. This is a program that until 2010s had won a national championship in every decade since the 90s. You know what I mean? This is a really historic program, 5 national championships, a bunch of Hall of Famers, 2 of them were walking around on Green Tree during the spring game.
Yep.
Like, I mean, and I tweeted this and it didn't get a lot of response. I was like, oh, I get it. The way to get back to being elite is start recruiting guys who are going to be Hall of Famers.
Correct.
Because when we had the Hall of Famers walking around, this team was unstoppable.
No doubt. So let me ask you this question. And then, you know, once we polish this off, we'll take a break and head to the transfer portal, because this is going to lead to that, right? But do you think the mindset of the coaching staff now is win now? Take advantage of the fact that you have a quarterback. Take advantage of the fact that you have a bunch of veterans. That this is an opportunity to try to do something now rather than it's another 2-3 years before we get to where we want to be.
That's a great question. And my answer is absolutely. There's confidential information that I share with you that we can't, you know, speak on publicly that tells you when I say Mario Cristobal and this staff is all in on this year, they're all in. And it's a put your money where your mouth is type of year. And and I'm telling you beyond a shadow of a doubt, this is what you call a strike year. This is a, I don't want to say all or nothing, but the question you have to ask yourself is, when is the next time we're going to have a Heisman-worthy, first-round-worthy quarterback with a talented receiver core, with a talented running back core, with this much talent on the offensive and defensive fronts? You know what I mean? Even for Miami, I mean, it's not traditional Miami great, but it's as good as it's been. And this many people coming back. You're not going to see this again. You know, you hope to see it year in and year out. But for Miami, they haven't seen this. And this is what made Bama special, Michigan special these last 3 years, Ohio State. It's the consistency of talent and at the high levels that you see it. You know, and so I think that this is an absolute win or go home year. And I'm nervous because there's so much not being said, because the question is, and you're not going to want to hear this, Beast, as an alum and fan and someone who covers it, but if Miami can't get it done with this team, is it even possible to do here anymore?
Yeah, I'm going to be in denial about what you just said for a while. So there's that.
It's a conversation we'll revisit, and I don't want to spoil it. Let the year play out. But
I will say this, and this is what tells me that things have changed a bit. And it's the one thing that some people don't look at, but they need to look at. And tell me if I'm wrong. But, you know, Georgia was just down here playing in the bowl game. I got to be around them a little bit covering that game. And Alabama's been down here. And all of the great teams have come through. And it was always my first observation that Miami cannot win until the trenches on both sides for the Hurricanes looks like what they got going on at those programs. Like just the size, the strength, the speed that you cannot win in this day and age in college football without that sort of strength, size, speed, depth along the offensive and defensive line. And Miami's finally gotten to the point where it's starting to look a lot more like those programs than it has in the past. And that, to me, is the sign that things are progressing. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I look at it.
No, and there have been a lot of questionable takes in the past and guys who didn't pan out and last-minute guys that, you know, were given scholarships. And, you know, you don't see a lot of that anymore. And Miami's moving on from guys after 2 years, been given chances and haven't really panned out and haven't become what they needed to become. And they're saying, hey, look, you might want to find a new place to go because, you know, again, you're not going to play here and you can't play here. And so, you know, we feel good enough about you to tell you, hey, you might want to find greener pastures because this is going to be a situation where you just ride the bench. And we talked about it openly. You know, there are 12 scholarships, and we'll get into this in the next segment. There's 12 scholarships that this team is looking to, you know, swap out, and they're halfway done with that. And it remains to be seen who's going to come in, but I can tell you this is going to be one of the most aggressive portal hauls that you've seen in a spring function of this new portal age by this Miami Hurricane team. And if they go get this running back from Oregon State, listen, that's not going to be easy. It's not going to be cheap. If they figure out a way to pull this off, Beast, the expectations are going to be sky high.
We'll get to that in a second. I'd be remiss. I totally forgot a guy that I wanted to give props to watching him in the spring game. Dude's huge. I know you saw him. I got a chance to see him up close and personal. And, you know, listen, it's the spring, so I'm just kind of you know, being a little bit calm, but big number 70, Markell Bell, lined up at tackle.
He's a big boy.
He's huge. And from what I got to talk to some former players that have been in the offensive line meetings and been around, and how he has improved from the first day he stepped foot on campus until that spring game has been exponential. He came in really raw and needing to improve on things, and he's worked at it and worked at it under Alex Maribel, and he's gotten better. And I'm not telling you he's the next coming to Bryant McKinney in a Hall of Famer, but what I am telling you is he looked the part.
And that's the thing. That's what all these new offensive line bodies, Samson Okola, this kid Bell, the other Maya Goa, these guys that are coming in have a certain level of girth to them, size, strength, and speed, and then they feel so good. And Mario Cristobal told me this himself. Don't worry about the offensive line. You know what I mean? Do not – like, that's the one thing we're not concerned about going into this season. So I have to trust, you know, coming out. And Mario, we trust. Again, Alex Maribel, we trust when it comes to that O-line. Look what they did last year, you know. And I feel like it was wasted to an extent because we didn't get the quarterback play we needed. Now, I still feel like we should have pivoted and gone to Emory or Ja'Curry. But, again, you know, I'm not going to cry over spilled milk. But at the end of the day, that's one thing that I think they've earned the benefit of the doubt in developing that position. And so I'm excited. They go get this guy from Oregon State, Beast. I'm telling you, it's a win now mindset down there. Those guys are really in their bunkers. They really are, man.
All right. Well, we will get to the portal. We got running backs to talk about. There's some offensive linemen. Who's going out? Who's coming in? Who did we lose? Should we worry about that? All of that stuff we will get to on the other side. It is the Real Ones Canes podcast. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Real Ones Canes podcast. He is Brandon O'Doy. Follow him on X at Brandon_O'Doy. I am the Beast Brian London. Follow me at Miami Radio Beast, and please subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening to it right now, at Amazon, Spotify, Apple, all of those places. Hit the subscribe button, give us a positive comment, hit the thumbs up, do all that stuff, and hit up the YouTube page as well. Brandon, the portal is open once again. Here we go with college football free agency, and I think we would be remiss if we didn't start by talking about someone who has left the University of Miami, and that is quarterback Ja'Curry Brown. You know, the writing's been on the wall since last season. And, you know, I don't know if I'll fully understand the Ja'Curry Brown story at the University of Miami. We wish the kid well. We are rooting for that kid, no doubt about it. He made a fan out of me. But you and I talked about it. There was going to be an odd man out in this quarterback room. That's the way the numbers looked. You know, I'm sad to see the kid go, but that's where we are.
Yeah, not enough scholarships to go around, Beast. You talk about having Judd Anderson, Emory Williams, Reese Poffenberger, and Cam Ward, four guys on scholarship in the QB room. That's typically how it goes. And somebody's got to be the odd man out, and this time it was Ja'Curry Brown. I think we all knew this was inevitable and was going to happen. I, for one, would have liked to see him, you know, go out during the December time frame. And I think he was a big-time program guy by staying and by helping solidify, because Miami would have had to play a walk-on in that game. Were he not, you know, willing to stick around, I think he did himself some favors. He played really well for a guy that had not played a down, and I mean a literal down, all season long. And it's really inexplicable to me, but whenever you see something that makes absolutely no sense, there's always reasons, Beast. I'm telling you, college football is a place where there is literally an answer for everything that you don't understand. You just may not be privy to understanding it. But I will say this. I talked to Mo Hassan because he happened to be out in Dallas, who did, you know, the podcast with Ja'Curry, the great interview. And one thing Mo said is, like, that interview, while it may have been, you know, something they didn't particularly like inside the Canes locker room, it made him a fan favorite. And it absolutely did, because this is a guy who wanted to compete with Cam Ward. He wanted to stick around. He wanted to be a Hurricane. He wasn't shy about the competition. And you have to like things like that. And Canes fans, you know, he endeared themselves, himself to them. And that's why you hate to see a guy like hear him go. Now, the question is, do Mario Cristobal and his staff have the savvy to say, hey, man, don't go to another school. Go to junior college. Play for a year and come back and get in this competition, you know what I mean, in December. And let you and Reese kind of, you know, bang this thing out. We just don't have the ability to, you know, work with you right now. Or it could be a situation where, you know, I felt like he should have been a guy that got a chance to sit behind Cam Ward, because they have similar styles. And I thought it would have been a great mentorship situation. You know, this guy's leaving, and now they have similar skill sets, and you get another year to hone your skills. Plus, you took a red shirt, so you're only a sophomore. You're going to have 2 years to play after Cam leaves. But then you went and got Reese Poffenberger. And so, yeah, they have similar skill sets too. One's a little bit bigger than the other, but they're both kind of like Johnny Manziel-ish type guys. I don't think Reese has the arm that Cam has, but Miami's made their decision and Ja'Quarri made his. I'm not sure if I agree with how they went along these lines, but the proof will be in the pudding. And you've got to allow your head coach to make decisions, and you got to live with them. And I wish Ja'Quarri well. He's a great program guy. He did not have to play in that bowl game. He should have, yeah, if it was serving himself, he should have gotten the portal and given himself every opportunity to go to the best fit, because right now all the quarterback spots are basically full for the places that, you know, went and picked up guys in the fall. So at the end of the day, it's a tough loss, but Miami has to move on. He did have some time as a freshman to prove himself. It wasn't what it needed to be, and now Miami's moving in another direction. So, you know, with JB, we wish him well, but it just wasn't enough room in that room.
Yeah, he will be missed, and we're definitely rooting for him, and you never know. Could end up back here in another season, no doubt about it. The other big story is, and we are recording, because we always like to be transparent, that we are recording this on Thursday afternoon, so anything can happen between the time that this is published and the time that we recorded it. So, as of right now, the top target for the University of Miami in the transfer portal is Damian Martinez, who did a great job at Oregon State last season, rushing for almost 1,200 yards. He's a six-foot kid, more than 230 pounds. He's from Texas. He runs the ball really hard. He's kind of a jack-of-all-trades in the running backfield. He is the top target right now. Again, this is as of Thursday afternoon when we are recording this. Mario Cristobal was on the phone with his parents last night. Matt Merritt, the running backs coach, was visiting with him in Texas last night. They are putting the full course press on this one, Brandon.
Yeah. I mean, you got to go get Martinez. If that's what you've identified as the biggest need, you don't know the health of Mark Fletcher. You don't know how he's going to respond as a true freshman coming back from his injury. You got a lot of unproven guys carrying the ball behind him. You know, Allen's coming off an injury as well. Jordan Lyles not even on campus yet. Wheatley Humphrey is a freshman. And you had Trevante Citizen just transfer. So you do need a back, because Henry Parrish hit the portal. And you need to be able to, you know, kind of manage what you have in the backfield. You know, Chris Johnson, call him CJ. He looked pretty good this spring, but he's not ready to be, you know, a big time carrier of the ball. He's more of a guy who can come in and add depth right now as a redshirt freshman. So they're going out and getting a vet. They're going to have to spend to get him. Cristobal rarely loses in these instances because he's got capable NIL abilities and he's a relentless recruiter. Matt Merritt will get a chance to show what he can bring to the table in recruiting with this. It's not going to be a difficult recruitment because he's going to want to make a decision pretty quickly, Mr. Martinez. But I do expect Miami to end up with this kid. I don't have any information. It's just the vibe I'm getting. because, you know, all of the people who cover Miami were immediately pointing to him. They did the same thing with Cam Ward. He's a Hurricane now. And so I expect it's just business to clean up, and I expect it to get done. And it's going to give you a heck of a 1-2 punch.
So aside from Damian Martinez, well, let's just look at the numbers for a moment. We think there's maybe 5 to 7 more guys that we'll see leave that haven't announced yet. And then there's going to be more guys coming in, and they got to get to 85 by the time a fall camp starts. So just how does this, on the big picture, how does this spring portal window look like it's going to work out to you?
Well, they're going to get this running back. They're going to go get this veteran receiver. That's happening. To what degree or what kind of veteran receiver, I don't know. I would say he's going to be on the bigger side. I don't think you need to go get somebody as big as Horton, because Horton is here and he's going to play. I think what you're concerned about is who's the guy that's had a lot of snaps, that has been in sort of the thick of things, maybe not so much at the Power 5 level, maybe at the MAC level, maybe even at the FCS level, but just has a lot of game time experience and big playability as far as like holding on to the football. Because one concern I did hear shared quietly is these freshmen look good, these younger guys look good, but are they going to drop the ball, you know, when the money's on the line? So the clutch ability is something that you can't project. You can hope for, but when you went out and spent all the kind of money that you spent to get a Cam Ward, the time, the investment, and everything you're putting into him, you've got to get him capable talent, and you've got to make sure that he's got 2 to 3 guys that are absolute dogs to catch the football. And so that's why I think you go get a veteran. We already know and well exhausted the cornerback position, we know has to be addressed, especially in that slot. And then they might do something in safety and at the linebacker position. So those are the things to keep an eye on. And it wouldn't surprise me if they went and got another defensive tackle as well. But, you know, they got their hands full, because this is a roster full of talent. You got to manage the money, and there's not an inexhaustible amount of it. So you got to make sure everybody's happy, you know, because that's one of the reasons Kobe Young left. You know, he didn't like what he was making in comparison to some other players, and he decided to seek out greener pastures. And people were just like, you guys are really letting that guy walk? And the best team in the country said, hey, we'll take you. Come on over, buddy. We appreciate that. And remember the last time, you know, a Miami receiver went to Georgia. His name was Lawrence Cager. And yep. He went from being just an okay guy here, and he turned into their number one receiver, and he went to the league. That yep. dude was a dude. I remember him running routes at a Paradise camp and thinking, wow, this dude's a dude. Why is he in a bigger deal? But again, quarterback play has been wanting in Coral Gables for quite some time. So this is going to be interesting, Beast, but that's what I expect to happen.
I'm thinking about some of the positions of needs and the numbers, what have you, and looking down, I mean, they only have 6 guys in the cornerback room right now that are on scholarship. Or actually, that's total. That's not just scholarship. That's total. 6 guys in the quarterback room. So you know you need somebody there. I feel like Miami, with what we said last segment about this kind of being, it's a now type of mentality, like it's a win now mentality, that if someone that can, regardless of who they have on the roster, if there's someone that becomes available in the portal that can make an immediate huge impact, Miami's gonna be after that. Mario's gonna get after that, because it is a win now mentality. So, you know, just because you're looking at the roster or the depth chart and you're like, oh, we're good at X, Y, or Z, we're good at this position or that position. Listen, if a stud is out there and they can afford it, because that's where we are right now, they're gonna make their case for that kid, because that's what they're up to right now. They are not going to waste this year with Cam Ward.
Can't waste it. And you could say that they learned a hard lesson from last year. You know, you had a really good offensive line with great options on both sides at the receiver position, a lot of depth. couldn't get people to football. And, you know, guys running wide open. We talked about it in the press conference. I mean, we talked about it at the press box all last year. We're sitting there watching guys walk. Can't get them to football. And, you know, it's no need to throw guys under the bus. They're gone. But, yeah, I mean, it makes a difference, man. It really does. So we want to make sure they got weapons for Cam Ward. We want to make sure that they got depth because people do get injured. You know what I mean? I mean, Miami had two or three running backs get injured last year, you know? So, yeah, it remains to be seen. But there's optimism. There's cautious optimism around this Miami Hurricane football program. And, you know, it's due to Mario Cristobal, his support staff, and some good decisions and great recruiting that they've done. You could talk about having money, but I'm telling you, I know recruits personally. You know what I do outside of this podcast. And I'm telling you, there are guys that have turned down less money to play in certain programs. It has to be more than that. So don't listen to this narrative, oh, Miami gets kids because of the money. The money is a factor. I'm not going to deny that. But sometimes kids want to feel wanted. They want to feel recruited. They want to feel like, hey, I'm going to play at a certain place. Miami brings a lot to the table, Beast, when it comes to those boxes being checked.
We could spend years and years and years of this podcast talking about UM football, and we will. But real quick, I need to change the subject because something's bothering me, and I know it's bothering you too. And that is UM baseball, who lost last night to Bethune-Cookman. Now, listen, Bethune-Cookman has had a really good program over the years, and they've certainly give Miami fits. But just in the context of this season of getting swept against Florida State, losing a bunch of midweek games, Brandon, I was looking at the ACC standings last night, like the wee hours, like 2 in the morning. Miami, overall, with just overall record, not ACC record, overall, has the second worst record in the conference. They have the third worst conference record, okay? They've won 2 games away from Mark Light Stadium, okay? 2 games on the road all year long. This is not the UM baseball that has been at the top of the top since the late 70s, early 80s, okay? I mean, it's been 40 years of great baseball, and they've just gotten away from what made them great. And it's pretty, you know what? I'll be honest with you. It's unacceptable. I'm not yet ready to call for heads to roll, but I'm getting pretty damn close. If I'm going to be honest with you, something needs to change down there. And listen, you and I aren't at every baseball game. We certainly aren't at the practices. We don't know exactly what, you know, JD Arteaga and his staff are seeing, but it's not good enough. It is not good enough for the University of Miami, not in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I can tell you one thing I do know, and what some of the insights that we're getting, there's a bad culture set under the previous coach. There's some guys who left, and I think this quick hire kind of dismissed some of the issues that were raised over the coach that departed, you know, very quickly. Yep. And it's always hard to follow up a great, you know, it's hard to follow up, you know, legacy and tradition. And, you know, Miami's struggling through that now with its baseball program. And you know what college baseball is. It's pitching and hitting. It's simple. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of defense played. If you can play good defense, that's fine. But you need pitching. And it's just so telling that the University of Miami is struggling when South Florida has the best team high school baseball in the country. There are 4 teams nationally ranked the last time I looked. And you can recruit without having to go past Jupiter. And it just doesn't make any sense. And so you've got to get in the grassroots. Miami is an expensive school to go to. You don't get full scholarships. You got to find guys that can afford to go, but it's been done in the past. And so what's different now?
Well, just a couple of things. One, and I'm not making excuses, but you know, when I was at school at UM, it was $30,000 a year. Now it's $95,000 a year to go to school. So, and again, baseball, you don't get full scholarships. You might get a quarter scholarship. You might get a half. Only once every, you know, decade does someone get a full scholarship. The Pat Burrells of the world, you know, get a full scholarship. So then parents have to start shelling out money to pay $95,000 a year for their kid to go play baseball at Miami when they might get a free ride because it's an in-state school at Florida or Florida State or somewhere else. So that's one thing. But two, you know, here's the history lesson. Ron Frazier, the wizard of college baseball, made not only put Miami on the map for college baseball, put college baseball on the map, was basically responsible for getting ESPN to cover the College World Series and make college baseball a thing. That was Ron Frazier, University of Miami. When Ron Frazier left, you had Brad Kelly for 1 year. It was horrible. He was one of Ron's assistants. It was terrible. And at the time, the University of Miami said, all right, that's it. We're like, enough of this. And what do? They went to another program that was absolutely on fire, and that was Georgia Tech, who had Nomar Garciaparra and Kevin Brown and Jason Veritek and a bunch of amazing players. And they went and got that coach, Jim Morris, to come in and, you know, bring the program back to the heights. And that's what Jim did. And this go around, they certainly took a chance on Gino DeMare. He was the guy that's been around for a long time. That didn't work out. So, but instead of going outside and going to find a coach that's been at a top school and bring him in and with a plan and all that stuff, they just kept it going with JD. Now, I love JD. I went to school with him. I've been covering him since, you know, he was on the mound and I was a student broadcaster on WVUM. This is not personal, but it ain't working right now. And if they have to make a change, it's time to go look outside the box. It's time to go look outside the program to find somebody that's just the best guy available, no matter what program they have a link to. Because the talent is around. There is enough talent in South Florida. And then also, you know, they used to go out to California and get guys and around the country and get, just like football, right? You get a lot of your talent from South Florida, but then you go to a California, you go to where you have to go to fill in needs. There is enough talent to make this program great again. They just have to have the right person at the helm. So, you know, and we'll have more on that. We'll effort a national college baseball guest in order to come break it down for us and see what we can do on that. But yeah, I had to bring it up. One more thing I have to bring up. I don't know if you caught this over the weekend, but a great friend of ours and a great journalist and yes, someone that has been just a stalwart and amazing writer and relentless and just so good at her job, one of my closest friends and colleagues, Susan Miller Dagnan from the Miami Herald, has hung it up, covered her last University of Miami event on Sunday, and then decided it's time to spend some time with the grandkids. So Susan Miller Dagnan, Brandon and I have known her for a long time. I've known her forever, ever since she took the beat over from D.L. Cummings way back when. Just one of the greats. And I'm going to miss her. I'm going to miss her in the press box. I'm going to miss her on the road. We used to go have dinner a bunch of times. I'm going to miss phone calls I would get. I'm going to miss the text messages I would get. Truly one of the greats. And really paving the way for women covering college football. Listen, for sure.
Susan Miller Dagnan she's a Hall of Famer to me. The deal is, she's so good and so unheralded, which is strange because she works for the Miami Herald. And I saw a tweet from the University of Miami. Hopefully they do way more than that. She deserves every bit of it. A quick Susan story. You know, I joined the Canes beat in 2011, and I was more full-time on it than I am now. I'm still a credentialed reporter, as are you, but neither of us spend as much time as we have in the past. But
right.
Susan Miller Dagnan asked Al Golden a question during all of the allegations, Nevin Shapiro and all this foolishness. And he just lit into her. And she stuck to her guns, was professional. And it turned out everything that Susan was saying was facts. And I just learned how difficult it is to be a journalist, but also be a woman and be a woman covering football, a sport that women just can't play at the professional level. And she's so knowledgeable, so humble, and she's so conscientious. She's like a worrywart. She doesn't even understand how good she is, but that's what makes her great, because she's always concerned about getting something wrong or not being on point. And she's awesome. She's a great feature writer, just a very heady beat writer, doesn't miss, humanizes stories, you know, goes behind the scenes on kids. I see kids come back, you know, after they've become whatever they've become, and they love on Susan, and she knows families. She's got, you know, tons of sources. She's great. I could talk about Susan forever. I traded texts with her. I said, Susan, you're the goat in my eyes. I said, I would have tried to find a way to get down there more this spring had I known you were going to leave. You know, knowing that this is the last time I'm going to hear your voice in the press box, and, you know, just watching you run to the elevator for press conferences and her red hair, and you know what I mean? Like, you know, she's just, for people who don't get a chance to know her, and there's all kind of foolishness about her on the internet, they don't make them like Susan. She's one of the most humble and awesome people. The beat won't be the same, because there aren't enough people who will say to Mario Cristobal, hey, what's this? And Susan was one of those people. We lost George. We lost Susan. We still got Manny. But, I mean, these are the people. And once they leave, good luck. Because, I mean, no one has the guts. And she was one of those people that did.
So Susan is off to the Pacific Northwest to go spend some time with her grandkids. She deserves that. And then she's getting a trip to Italy to go celebrate her retirement. When she comes back, though, maybe we'll get her on. We'll tell some stories. We'll talk about that Al Golden situation.
Story time with Susan. I'm looking forward to that. That's a great episode.
I like it. All right, Brandon. We will get back to – look, again, we're recording this Thursday afternoon. Guaranteed by the time we get off here and go look at X, there's going to be some portal news. So we will be covering that for the foreseeable future. And we will move on with the offseason and see what this team looks like. Brandon, always a pleasure, my friend. Everybody out there, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the Real Ones Games podcast. We'll check you next time. Peace.